Hey everyone, this is Klaatu. This is the GNU World Order episode 12 of season 11. Last I left you, it was just last week. Yes, it is. It's happening, everyone. It is happening. There is a new GNU World Order episode within a week of the previous. So this is exciting. This is a good start to my new system. Let's start with some listener feedback, and then I'm going to talk about the singular topic that I wanted to talk about this episode. Remember, these are short episodes. That's the new system. Short and easy to record and easy to post. That's what we're going for. So I got an email from a guy named John, and John said, "You mentioned Jason Van Gumster's Blender for Dummies book. His open source creative podcast gives many examples of how you can do serious, quote-unquote serious, creative work with open source tools." So let's stop there. Jason Van Gumster is a guy who goes by the name of Fweeb online sometimes. Sometimes also Monster Java Guns is what he's called. So he's got a couple of identities. And I got a chance to meet him at a conference called All Things Open, which I attended the past 2 years, I think. Went all the way to the U.S. for that one, the 48-hour, literally 48-hour journey to the U.S. to go to that conference. And it was a lot of fun both times. Didn't go this past year. Anyway, met Jason there. He turns out to be a really, really nice guy, really down to earth, just really cool, really knowledgeable, and, you know, really talented. I've seen a lot of his artwork, both Blender artwork as well as physical art stuff that he carves. He carves, like, rings out of, I don't know what he carves them out of, but yeah, he actually carves rings, like, for your fingers. It's really, really cool. And he does a bunch of sketching and illustration and stuff. So it's really, really amazing work. The guy's a really decent guy. And he does have a podcast called Open Source Creative Podcast, which you should check out if you don't listen to it. I subscribed to it, and I listen to it as often as I can. At my new job, the podcasting schedule, like listening schedule, is a little bit weird because there's not a definitively good time to listen to podcasts. My previous job, there was a certain rhythm to every day that you could pretty much expect. You could kind of count on it. And at this new job, there's not really that kind of predictability, so it's a little bit difficult. But anyway, I digress. Great podcast, Open Source Creative. Go check that out. So anyway, John continues to say, "I also believe that a particular skill should transcend the applications used by the skill. For example, if you are very good at creating digital images in Photoshop, those skills are easily transported to GIMP after only a day or two of playing around. I get tired of job adverts that say must hold a certificate or have experience in X or Y application. In my experience, if you are good at a related application, it should only take you a few days at most to get up to speed in a new application that uses the same skill set." I don't know where John came from or how he found my show or why he's emailing me, but this was possibly one of my favorite sort of quotes from an email that I've gotten in a very, very long time, certainly since last week. I mean, it says so much, and it's one of those things where some people just email me and say something, and it just makes me kind of feel stupid because I feel like I've been saying that one sentence in paragraphs for hours for the past 3 years, and never quite hit on it as succinctly as he did. So I'm going to just kind of read it again. "In my experience, if you are good at a related application, it should only take you a few days at most to get up to speed in a new application that uses the same skill set." I don't really remember what I personally, this is Klaatu again, I don't remember what I said about this whole matter in the previous episode. I mean, I know I spoke about it, I just don't exactly remember what I said about it. But what John says here obviously rings very, very profoundly with me. Because I really like to hear it expressed this way. And there's this expectation in John's presentation that this is how it should be, you know? And this is the kind of expectation you would, I think, expect, I don't know, a a business to have, really, like a self-respecting company should expect that of their employees. You know, I would imagine if I were a manager of some company and someone came in and said, yes, I have the skills to do graphic design, then wouldn't it be reasonable to point them at a computer and say, cool, we run Scribus, Inkscape, and GIMP. That's our tool chain. Go forth and design. Come back in at least, let's say, John says a day or two, or a few days. Let's give them a week. Let's give them 2 weeks. But after that, they should be up to speed. They should be able, honestly, 2 weeks is too long. Let's say a week. After that, they should be up to speed. They should know everything. Because, I mean, look, here's the thing. I didn't come to Linux knowing Scribus. I didn't come to Linux knowing Inkscape. I did come to Linux knowing GIMP. I actually started learning that before I started messing around with Linux. But I didn't know all this stuff. Just, you know, I wasn't born that way. I didn't install Linux on my computer and then simultaneously install the knowledge of how to use Scribus in my brain. It's something that I picked up. And it's something that I picked up because I'd been trained in similar applications in film school and in art school. Sort of all my friends were sort of using that sort of application, and we would teach each other that stuff. And when I came to Scribus, it was really a matter of one afternoon to sit down and just kind of, you know, you just know the workflow. And Scribus is probably a pretty good example too, because, like, if you've ever, you may never have used a graphic like a page layout program. You may have, but the professional page layout programs, and I'm air quoting professional because I don't love that concept, but it's a useful phrase sometimes. But the ones that are kind of like, yeah, they're meant for certain things. They have this weird sort of workflow where you can type in some text, and then you put a little box in, or some shape that you are going to then fill in with an image. So rather than sort of grabbing an image from your hard drive and sort of putting it into your page layout program and then sort of maybe applying a shape over it and masking it and doing all these other things, you just put the shape in, and then you somehow need to, and that's a known, that container will contain an image. We know that. So then you have to set what image it's going to contain, and that's the second step. And I think that with a lot of other programs, it's the other way around. You pull in the image, and then you figure out what shape it's going to be masked into, like an Inkscape, or you pull in an image, and you just kind of resize it and drag it around the page, maybe in LibreOffice or something. But in Scribus and other applications like it, you set the container, and then you fill that container with an image. So what I'm trying to say is that when I was first learning Scribus, I knew that workflow. You know, I knew I have to create an image box, and now I have to figure out, and there used to be, you know, on other similar applications, there were very specific keyboard shortcut that everyone just kind of knew. And if I recall correctly, and I could be recalling incorrectly, but if I recall correctly, you couldn't just right-click on the box and say, you know, get image like you can in Scribus. You had to, if I recall correctly, you had to know the keyboard shortcut. There may have been a menu selection somewhere, but yeah, it was very sort of a specific workflow. And so it just took me an afternoon, really, to sit down with Scribus, and I knew things like, okay, well, I want to put an image in, so I'll put the container, and then I'll figure out the right keyboard combination or mouse click combination to fill that container with an image. So you know these things, you just don't know some of the specifics. And so I don't really care what tool it is that you were trained on, but there are only a set number of ways to skin a cat, and eventually you hit upon the method that some application uses. And that shouldn't take you too long. And it strikes me as kind of funny and odd that people, when presented with an alternative application, very often have this kind of impossible mix of extreme egocentrism and self-deprecation. And by that I mean, you know, you present someone with GIMP or something, and they look at it and they say, well, I can't use that. I use a professional tool such as blah. But then at the same time, what they're really saying, and they may say this instead, they're also kind of saying, well, I can't learn that. Like, something new, a learning curve, you say? No, I can't do that. So it's like they're at the same, they're both too good for this thing and not good enough for it. And it seems like there's this middle ground there that's kind of missing, wherein you're just kind of like, I don't know that yet, but I could know that if I tried. And that's all it would take. So it really is perplexing to me that those two extreme, those polar opposites coexist so neatly together whenever someone is presented with an option that is outside of their immediate training. So anyway, thank you very much, John, for the email. I clearly enjoyed it, and I emailed them back personally, but I kind of wanted to just mention it and harp on it again on the show, obviously. So now I want to talk about one more thing before I go. So I've developed this thing recently. I guess it's a system, and I finally decided to unleash it on the rest of the world. Sorry, just having a little sip of coffee there. Since the show doesn't have coffee breaks anymore, I guess I just have to drink my coffee as I go. Anyway, I wanted to talk about this thing that I'm calling it attach up. As in, don't back up, attach up. That's the slogan, that's the marketing slogan. So what is attach up? Well, some time ago I developed this system, and I don't exactly remember how this came about. I think what it was, if I'm recalling correctly, was that I had several computers in my life, primarily because none of them had a very good battery life. I'd gotten a bunch of laptops from a proverbial dumpster, not an actual dumpster, but, you know, I rescued a bunch of laptops. I was running Linux on one, Slackware on one. I was running FreeBSD on my Toshiba, and I was running, I think it was Ubuntu at work at the time. It was, it was Ubuntu at IBM. And so I had these computers in my life, and I think I had another, I want to say, yeah, I must have had the triple EPC, which I think at that time would have also been running Slackware. Either that or Mandriva. So I had these computers, and I would have to kind of swap them out, because I was living mostly in cafes at the time. I was always at a cafe working, or I was at work. So I'd have to swap out which computer I was using based on whether I'd scored a seat by the electricity, the outlet, or not in whatever cafe I ended up in. So if I didn't, then I'd have to swap out my laptop. And in order to continue working, I had to just keep working off of my thumb drive. So I developed a system where all my important data, all the data that I actually cared about, was on my thumb drive. And at one point, I kind of got worried because I realized that all my data that I cared about was on a single thumb drive, which I carried in my pocket. And if anything were to happen to that thumb drive, all the stuff that I actually cared about would be gone. And so it occurred to me that the really convenient and smart way to avoid this would be to have a system that backed up my thumb drive to my computer whenever I plugged in my thumb drive. So I call that the attach-up system. And this system's primary thesis is that your thumb drive holds your master copy of your data, and your computers are the backup. So it's turning backup a little bit on its head, because typically the computer that we have is, you know, the owner of our master data, and then we maybe plug in a portable drive to back up all of our stuff from our computer to that portable drive, or maybe we have a cloud account somewhere that we or a remote server somewhere that we back up our important data from our computer to this remote location. And while that does work, I have personally found it really, really convenient to just carry my master copy, the master copy of my data around with me. Because that way, no matter what computer I'm near, I have my home directory on me. Now, I say home directory, but I should clarify, just because there would be ways, I know, to sort of literally do that, to make my thumb drive a home directory. And that's not what I'm doing. It's just a functional home directory. So it is not literally the slash home partition of my computers. I mean, I could do that. That would be interesting, but I'm not going to anytime soon that I'm aware of. But my live data, the stuff that I care about, is on my portable thumb drive. And it gets backed up to the main computers that I attach it to, that I plug it into. So there's a backup of that thumb drive on my laptop, and there's a backup of that thumb drive on my desktop. Every time I plug it in, it gets backed up to my computer. Now, it has happened before that a drive will die, or maybe I do something stupid. You know, I get up at like 4 a.m. and think it's a really sensible time to repartition, you know, some external drive, and I don't think about what drive that would actually be, and I just do some stupid command on a DD command or a parted command on my computer and completely fry a hard drive. Have I done that before? Maybe. Let's not go into specifics. All I'm saying is that if that happens, it doesn't even matter, because I know that all of my actual data is right there on my thumb drive, safely backed up. If my thumb drive gets destroyed, that doesn't matter either, because I have a copy of that data on my computer. The cool thing too is that if you're working on different parts of a project on different computers, which I have done, for instance, for something that requires a bunch of animation, or lately even my music work, I do on my desktop. That's what I use my desktop for. Heavy graphics or music or animation, whatever, I do that on my desktop. I could probably do it on a laptop, but I tend to just kind of go to where the real power is and just, you know, live a life of luxury with my 6-core 24 gigabyte RAM desktop. Why not? So I might have the animation files and the music files on my desktop for a project, and then text files and maybe smaller graphics on my laptop. Now the question becomes, how do I get those two project directories merged? Or how do I know which one, if they're both the same directory, how do I know which one is the most recent? And if I'm working off my thumb drive, then that becomes a bit of a moot point, because I always know where the latest copy is. It's on my thumb drive. And when I plug it in, the local copy on that computer gets updated with whatever the thumb drive master has on it. And there are obviously a couple of different ways you could work that. You could use rsync to actually make them the same, or you could use, I use rdiff-backup, which I think it uses librsync to actually do the backup and to sort of detect changes, but it does it to a structure of diff files that get tarred up according to what, you know, day and time they were made. So it's actually a really, really wonderful system that I really, really like. And that's what I'm using on my little attach-up system. So, okay, now I've given you all the reasons that I like it, but here's how it works. It's a really simple system. It uses UDEV on Linux. I'm working on a BSD version that will use DevD, but I'm still learning about DevD. I don't know a whole lot about it. So for now, it's on Linux with UDEV and Python and what else? Librsync and rdiff backup, obviously. So it's a nice, simple little system that can be made even simpler, honestly. My very early versions were, it was just a UDEV script that would kick off, you know, when a certain drive was inserted, it would kick off a shell script that just did an rsync from the thumb drive to the computer. It was as simple as that, and that's kind of all it really needs, to be honest. But I decided to go a little bit heavier, just to kind of give myself a few more options and to make it a little bit more robust. So here's what I've got. I've got a 64 gig thumb drive, which I bought about 5 years ago, and it's been pretty good for me so far. I'll probably update to 128 USB 3 pretty soon here, but for now it's a 64 USB 2, which, you know, is a little bit on the slow side, but like I say, it's actually been fine for me so far. I haven't actually had a problem with it. And I've got two components with a third bonus component. So one component are the thumb drive, the scripts, the backup scripts themselves. And for that, I have just an example. I'm distributing this now over GitLab.com. So for release, I have developed a little sample script, a backup script, that essentially looks to make sure that in your home directory or in whatever folder you want to assign as your backup directory, there is a .rdiff folder somewhere, some thumb drive label .rdiff. And if it's not there, then it makes that directory. And then it commences an rdiff backup. So it pulls everything that's updated off of the thumb drive, tars it up in diffs, and slaps it into your backup folder. If that fails, it tells you so in a little backup log that it also, again, dumps into your home directory. And then as a failsafe, it chones your backup directory to whatever user should own it, so to your user account. And that's simply because between my work computer and my home computer, I don't have the same username because the work naming scheme was very specific, and it's not something that you can change. So I have to have a different user there. A little bit of a bother, but not a huge deal. Either way, I just figured, well, I'll go ahead and do a chown just in case other people don't standardize their usernames either. So that's the script. That's the one that does the backup part of it. And there's nothing fancy about it. It is basically just an rdiff backup script. I mean, that's it. That's all it is. So aside from that, there's the UDEV script. And the UDEV script is a little bit fancier. It's gotten really fancy after I figured out some tricks from some examples online. Originally, it was simply look for an added device, look at that device's vendor ID and product ID, and if it matches this condition that I want because I know my thumb drive, then start the backup. And that's all it did. Now it's a little bit fancier because I'm not going to assume, you know, I mean, for me, I've got like this one very specific thumb drive that I'm using. It's the only brand of hard drive. It's an HP thumb drive. I don't remember how or why I got it, but that's, you know, it's the only one that I have. I don't have any other HP drives. I didn't even know they made drives, to be honest, but I ended up with one by this 64 gig thumb drive. So it was very specific, and I just happened to know that I would never plug in another device that would match that product ID and vendor ID. So now that I'm releasing this to the public, I figured, well, you know, I should be a little bit more formal about this. And so instead of using just a vendor ID and product ID, I'm using the UUID of the device, of the partition, I should say. Now the device, the UUID of a partition can be found a couple of different ways, really. One of the ways is that you can do an ls of /dev/disk/, and then buy dash, and then if you do a couple of tabs, you'll see all the different options that you've got. So there's a part UUID, and it'll list all the different devices that are attached to your system by their partition IDs. You can look at them by dash label, and it'll list all the user-friendly label names that of the devices attached to your system. So you can get all that information just kind of by looking at your device tree. So the UUID of the partition is what the UDEV script uses to identify the device that you have just attached in my attach-up system. And that makes sure, I mean, it's a UUID, it's a unique identifier, so, and unique in the truest sense, that there will not be two of the same things. Apparently there are a trillion different combinations of UUID numbers or something crazy like that. So that's enough to get the actual, you know, to make sure that we're talking about the same device. So yes, that 64 gig thumb drive by HP with a certain label, you know, you can give it as many attributes as you want. If it still will have its own UUID, so we can identify it and pinpoint it with that information. Now, because UUIDs aren't super friendly to look at, I decided to use the file system label to give a unique name to the thumb drive that manages that drive's backup. And I'll explain why I'm doing it this way in a minute. I mean, I just did, but there are more reasons even. But a file system label is just it's a human readable string that you can assign arbitrarily to a drive when you format it for your system. Now, depending on how you create your drives, you may or may not bother giving them a file system label. So if you've ever used just like mkfs.ext, let's say 4, then you'll have possibly known, or noticed rather, that I'm just trying to get there so that I can get the help message that I want to read. There we go. mkfs.ext4. There's a dash capital L for volume label. So if you were creating a file system on a partition, you'd be using mkfs.ext4 maybe, and then you could do a dash L and give it the file or the label my drive. Hopefully you'd be a little bit more creative than that, but that's what you could do. And there's an equivalent label function on most you know mkfs varieties. And if you've already got a drive formatted and you want to assign a new label, you can usually do that with either some related util package, like a JFS utils or XFS utils, or E2 label is the one for EXT series, E2 label. And apparently, on top of all those, there's one called M label. And so that apparently will allow you to alter the label of your drive. I've never used mlabel, but that's something that I found online. So apparently that does it. Point being, you can give arbitrary names, friendly names, to your device. And when AttachUp is configuring your backup script, or when you're doing it manually, you can look at the label and call your backup script, you know, mydrive.attachup.sh, and then your UDEV script will know to run that script because this device has been attached. So it identifies the device by UUID, it takes a look at the label, and then it launches whatever backup script matches that label -attachup.sh. And then it starts backing. It does the RDIF backup to whatever location you've decided should be your backup location. Now the reason I kind of keep talking about, you know, I sort of unclearly about like where these things are and I guess who owns them and all this other stuff is because it is written. The application is written for a multi-user system. Linux cannot assume, or one should not assume when one is writing for Linux, that the system being used is for a single user. So AttachUp is compliant, I guess, with a multi-user setup. So if you want, you can set up your backup scripts to back up to some root location like /var/attachup or whatever, and put all your, dump all your backups there. And individual users can own those backup files and have access to them, but that way they go to some common location rather than to an individual user's home folder. Or you can put it in an individual user's home folder. It doesn't really matter. It's up to you. But you do have that flexibility. Now, all of this stuff, when I do it myself before I sort of decided, hey, this is not a horrible system. I should publish it somewhere. I used to just do it all manually. So I would type up the UDEV script or copy and paste it. Type up a backup script or copy and paste that. And that would be attach up. Yay, done. It's all set up. And I mean, it's across two different computers, so it's not really that big of a deal for me to do it that way. But as I was kind of working on this, I kind of realized that what really needed to happen was that attach up needs a command. It didn't seem enough to just release this concept. Even if it is, I mean, it would be an example UDEV script and an example shell script, but I still kind of felt like for it to feel manageable for some people, maybe it would be more helpful to provide a command to sort of set it all up. So I created this really easy little simple Python 3 script called attachup.py. And it's actually kind of handy. It's kind of nice. So what it does is it can set up or remove an attach up UDEV rule and an attach up shell script. And it does this by simply, whenever you want to add a new device to your system, you use attachup.py to tell it the UUID of the device that you want to add. And if you don't know it, it will tell you. It uses pyUDEV to do all the probing for you. So it kind of tells you, hey, you've got these devices hooked up to your system. It's got it lists the UDEVs, the UUIDs rather, and the file system labels for you, so that you kind of have some idea of, oh yeah, that's my thumb drive right there, the one called my drive. So that must be the UUID. Okay, cool. So I'll take that and I'll pass it on to attachup.py again. So then you do attachup.py. And what it wants from you is it wants a UUID, it wants a label, a file system label, and I think that's all. Oh, and it needs to know whether you want to add or delete a rule. So it's either a dash dash add or a dash dash delete. And I think that's all it really absolutely needs. It might need a username as well. And it kind of defaults, a bunch of these things default to root user and kind of root file system stuff. So for personal use, you would want to override this stuff. But it kind of, again, it kind of depends on the scheme that you want to use for your own, for your system. But so you do like a attach up dot py dash dash UUID and then some string. And then, well, it would be the correct number, the correct UUID of your thing. And then dash dash label and the file system label, so it would be, let's say, my drive. And then the path, let's say that I actually want to back it up to /home/klaatu. And then dash a for add, or I could do dash dash add. The rule is good. It'll save it by default to /etc/udev/rules.d/81-attachup.rules, but you could put it into some other rule if you wanted to. The configuration file is correct. That's /etc/attachup.conf, which isn't even a required configuration file. Dash e exec path is by default user local bin, so I'll keep that. Dash u by default is the root user, so I'll set that to klaatu, and then the group by default is root, so I'll set that to users, and then I'm going to set it to dev mode because I don't actually want this to work. And then you hit return, and it adds, it parses the example udev rule and the example thumb drive command, the backup script, and puts them into your udev rules.d directory, and puts the shell script in your user local bin. And those two are now talking to each other, as it were. One, you know, they each know, the udev will know which label to start when a certain UUID is inserted, and it just kind of works. And if it doesn't, it gives you a nice loud log file warning so that you know that it doesn't work, or that it hasn't worked. The backend, as I say, is rdiff-backup, so if you need to restore data ever, it's really easy to do. Rdiff-backup is really, really not scary at all. It's a really nice little backup application. And the schema, I guess, or the syntax for rdiff-backup restoring is really pretty simple. It is rdiff-backup --restore --as --of, and then whatever. So let's say now, or if you want 2 days ago, you could do 2D, or 5 days ago, 5D. But generally speaking, for me, I usually do restore as of now, because it's usually, oh, I didn't mean to trash that, or I didn't mean to absolutely slaughter that otherwise good article that I was writing. I'd rather just start from where I was yesterday, or when I turned my computer on. So yeah, --restore as of, and then whatever, so now, and then the path to your backup, to the file as it exists in the backup directory. So it would be, you know, $home/mydrive.rdiff/foo.txt, and then where you want to copy it to restore it from, and then where do you want it to go to. So $home/foo.txt. And it pulls the latest copy of that file and puts it to wherever you know, in your home directory in this case. Now, you can do it a little bit differently. You know, you can, I mean, the path is the same, but if you want the version of that file from 2 days ago, then it's again just rdiff-backup -r, or you know, --restore as of, or just --r --r2d for 2 days, and then $home/mydrive.rdiff/foo.txt, and then you can just slap that wherever you want it to go. So $home/foo.txt, and it takes that file, except it restores all the diffs, you know, and it kind of backtracks for, you know, to go back 2 days, and gets that version of that file and puts it into your home directory. So it's really, really not hard, and if you need anything more complex than that, you can certainly look at rdiff's documentation, and there's a bunch of other tricks, but that's really basically, so far for me, all I've ever needed was just kind of, what's that command again? And it's super easy to remember. It's restore as of, and then some time definition. And there are lots of different time definitions you can use. You can use numerical dates. You can just kind of use fuzzy human terms. It's pretty forgiving. So it's a really nice little backup script, or backup system. And AttachUp, I feel, leverages rdiff-backup really well, and also leverages the concept of a portable home drive really, really useful. I really find it very liberating, because I absolutely know where my data is at all times, and then I always know that it's being backed up. It's pretty good. Pretty good stuff. At least for me and my workflow. So here's the negatives of this system. Number one, biggest one probably, is that when you plug your drive into a hot computer, into a computer that is armed with AttachUp, there will be a delay in when the drive mounts. So you should be aware of that. If you're just one of those people who can't slow down, and you plug in your thumb drive and you want it to be available right now, then this might not be the best system for you, because there is a delay while rdiff kicks in, does the backup, and then kind of releases it so that your desktop can mount the drive. There's some truth to that. That's a little bit misleading because, in fact, you can probably access that drive manually in wherever it, in order for it to be backed up, obviously it has to be mounted. So I mount it to /media/my drive. So /media and then whatever its label is, essentially. So I can go in there and screw around with it all I want. I just don't like doing that because I assume, well, you're thinking right now, you're taking the data, I'm not going to go in there and change the data. So I kind of just keep my hands off until my desktop says, yep, I have now detected this drive, it's been released from, you know, all the background processes, so would you like to mount this thing? And then I mount it, and then I use it that way. I also haven't really exactly sorted out how to make it such that I can eject that drive without without giving root permissions, because I don't set in the UDev script, I don't tell UDev to give the drive any special access permissions. I just have it just mount it straight to /media/my drive or you know label file system label as a directory. And when I remove it, I have that directory removed. But in between those two times, I never actually chown the directory to my local user. So unmounting it is seen as a root action for my systems right now. And I haven't really addressed that because it doesn't affect me. Because my use case is that when I have this thumb drive plugged in, then my computer is on, you know, like, and if my computer's on, and I'm working on something, then I've probably got this thumb drive plugged in. So that's a bit of a drawback if that's not how you're going to use the system. The other drawback is, or the, I guess tangential to that is that, yeah, your computer is now dependent upon a thumb drive. I mean, it isn't literally, cause like I say, it's not your literal /home directory, but more than likely, if your computer's on and you're working on something, then you're going to have a thumb drive sticking out of it. And maybe that doesn't work for you. Maybe that's a deal killer. That just doesn't work out. You don't want to have something poking out of your computer all the time. I don't really mind it. It's just kind of, I've been doing it for so long at this point, this is pretty standard for me, and I just kind of accept it. At some point, maybe, who knows, maybe SD cards will become so useful and so great that one could implement the system and it would appear to be then internal because you would plug the SD drive in and it would just kind of become flush with your computer. But I haven't really ventured into huge SD cards so far. And part of the reason for that is because, number one, they don't attach to my keychain. And number two, they don't... My desktop doesn't have a SD card slot, so I would have to get, like, an adapter, and it's just, yeah. Thumb drives are working better for me right now. But that's it. That's the touch-up. The idea is, again, backup from your thumb drive, or from your portable drive to your computer, not the other way around. It's a useful little trick. You can find it somewhere online. I'll post a link to it, probably. I imagine I will. I can't imagine I wouldn't. And you can take a look at it. It's a fun little system, and yeah, it works for me. Maybe it'll work for you. Maybe it won't. I don't know. But now you know about it, and you can try it if you think it's interesting. Hey, thanks for listening to the show. That's it for this week. I'll talk to you again next week. Oh yeah, how can you find me? Yes, my email, klaatu@member.fsf.org. That's member, like I'm a member of FSF, Free Software Foundation, .org. Talk to you later.